Okay. Thank you all for joining us this afternoon. And I want to give a big thank you to Elaine Franklin and Mark Townley, who will be speaking with us this hour. Elaine is director, and Mark is assistant director of programs at the Keenan Fellows Program. So, this interview is an element of IRI's diversity, equity, and inclusion community. The DEI provides resources and networking opportunities for members as they promote DEI in their innovation and R&D practices. As the community grows, you will be able to access facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. Those are on the second Thursday of every month. Our last one actually happened, sorry, second Friday. So our last one actually happened last Friday, but we can send you the invitation to next month if you're interested. We will be shortly releasing white papers with fresh, relevant content, updates with insights and additional resources, and interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. These will always take place on the second Thursday of the month at 12 o'clock Eastern. And I'll be sure to sign everybody up to receive updates on the DEI community. And if you do not wish to receive updates, please let me know. I think most of the people here already get them. So I have a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Elaine and Mark. So first, this session is being recorded, and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there will not be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can type your question into the chat and I'll read it out for you, or you can raise your hand using that function on the dashboard. All right, now that we've gotten all that out of the way, again, Elaine, Mark, thanks for joining me this afternoon. So, Elaine, tell me about the Keenan Fellows Program and your mission.
All right, well, thank you so much for inviting us. We're happy to be here. The Keenan Fellows Program for Teacher Leadership, and that's the full name of it, is located at North Carolina State University. We are an initiative of the Keenan Institute for Engineering, Technology, and Science. And the Keenan Fellows Program was founded in 2000. And the original idea was that what happens in school should be better connected with what happens in the workplace, and particularly in the STEM area. So in the early programs were those fellowships were really tying teachers in Central North Carolina, particularly kind of the Research Triangle Park area, together with STEM mentors, professions, researchers in biotech companies and universities in this area. Over time, it's really stretched across the state. And our goal is to have educators in all 100 counties of North Carolina that are connected with professionals from STEM fields in their community. The fellowship itself is a one-year-long program. It does not take teachers out of the classroom. They receive 80 hours of professional development that Mark leads so spectacularly and his crew. The professional development focuses on leadership because it's a competitive program. I should have mentioned that. They have to apply for it, go through an application process and selection process. And then after they are selected, they enter into the professional development pieces of that. But I think one of the things that makes this program so unique is that part of their professional development, this is in addition to the 80 hours, is a 3-week internship with a STEM mentor in a business, industry, or a research setting in their community. I should also add that the teachers receive a $5,000 stipend for the year that they are involved in the program. And then from their experiences, they develop a product out of that. Traditionally, those have been curriculum products that they take and implement back in their classroom. But in recent years, we've also had a number of really interesting products that actually benefit the industry itself. And Mark may talk a little bit more about those later on.
All right, awesome. Thanks for giving us some background. So, how are you working to ensure diversity and inclusion, particularly in your application process?
Right. So there are several answers to that. One of the answers, I guess, is that we actually had the application process analyzed. This was several years back, and we were fortunate to be able to connect with a doctoral student in the psychology program here at State who was looking for a project. And So she conducted a pretty in-depth analysis of our application process, and then looked at how does our alumni base reflect the different school districts that they came from in terms of diversity. And we were really surprised and happy to find out that that not only does that alumni base reflect the diversity in their communities, but it actually maybe exceeds a little bit. So the bad news is that we don't know how that happened exactly. We are more intentional about it now, but it was a nice outcome. It was nice to recognize that, but over the years of the program, we're not really sure that that was intentional, but it turned out that way. Since then, it's become much more intentional. And one of the ways I really wanted to emphasize that we really focus on equity. As I said, this program started in Central North Carolina, very Raleigh, you know, Chapel Hill kind of based program. And about 9 years or so ago, when I first came to the program, I really thought a lot about rural North Carolina. North Carolina is the second largest rural state, I guess. It has the second most rural communities, I think maybe second to Texas. And so these opportunities, I was seeing how beneficial it was to the teachers, the kids in this local community, but why are we not having that throughout North Carolina? Because that, for me, was a real equity issue, because we have a lot of low-wealth communities, particularly in some of these rural areas. We have, you know, a fairly long state with mountainous western communities, and then we have Outer Bank communities. And so we've worked very strategically and intentionally identifying regions of the state when we've not been in, finding industry partners and funding partners in those areas who can help us form those projects and form fellowships. And I apologize for my phone.
That's awesome. So did you have anything that you wanted to add to that, Elaine?
Those are really kind of the two pieces. It was really having a study done of the application process, and then realizing that we needed to be more state-based, and we needed to be more equitable across all kinds of communities in North Carolina. I think one of the things that's really interesting about that is that, I guess in the beginning, we were kind of told, maybe some people would say, well, there aren't any industries in those communities, you know, and we didn't accept that. And so we knew that every county has utilities, and you know, every county has an agricultural component to it. And so we became much better at finding those industries that are local. And so connecting them to the teachers is really important, but also something that happens as a result of that is that you start having a more workforce-focused education initiative, which may help to attract industry into some of those communities, because you know, we know that businesses want to have a viable workforce for the communities that they move into.
Yeah, definitely. So, Mark, tell us about the learning process. When you and I spoke about the program, you said it was project-based learning. Can you tell us a bit more about that and how it's more inclusive and equitable than, you know, the learning processes that I had back in the 80s and 90s?
Sure. And you know, one thing I would add is that, you know, as Elaine mentioned, you can't really promote DEI until you've done a lot of self-reflection. And leading into project-based learning, you know, it requires an educator to really kind of reflect on their presence in the classroom and whether they want to be the sage on the stage, as we've often heard them called, or if they want to be the guide on the side. And so the first thing that has to happen for you to promote, you know, inclusion is to have that self-reflective kind of look. And we really want to be a model for inclusion for award organizations across the state. And so we did that deep dive into how we have been accessible with our application, interview, and selection process. And then actually from there started looking at the pedagogy and all the different components that can be as inclusive as possible. And as you mentioned, you know, project-based learning is a big part of what we try and provide experience for teachers with. And really what I think it's more profession-based learning, right? Because we provide the industry partnership, you know, with this school community. So we come in and we, you know, select this incredible educator, you know, to be this bridge of communication between entities that don't often speak with each other. So the teacher is talking to the industry partner or the other local organizations, and they're getting resources and they're learning from each other, and there's a lot happening there. So when you immerse for 3 weeks with one of these partners through our fellowship program, you start to see different things with this industry. How do they problem solve? Right? What are the methods that they use to figure out these, you know, to critically think through these issues? And these are local issues, right? These are issues that they need help, you know, through the hiring process, and they need the skills and talent pool to be grown in that community so they can hire these kids from, you know, from that community and really, you know, strengthen those partnerships. So nothing does that better than project-based learning. Project-based learning makes you, it doesn't change how you teach. It makes it more authentic, right? So it's, you have an authentic audience. So now you have somebody that can come in and provide their expertise to your students. And that's the one of the biggest and most important pieces of project-based learning, is you have this authentic audience that is actually providing their expertise there. And you have these local driving questions that these kids are dealing with. And project-based learning meets kids where they are. So if you are already really strong in this area, they can push you into group situations that allow you to kind of continue your growth. So if you're an academically gifted student, you can actually be pushed farther. But if you're on the other end of that spectrum and you need a little bit more support, project-based learning provides tons of scaffolds. And so you have opportunities to help kids where they are and give them access to resources and expertise. And here's all the pathways. Maybe you're not, you know, going to graduate and go to college. Well, here's a certification program that you can take right in your community that to get a job at this place of business right there. Maybe it's a two-year, you need that certification there, a two-year degree or a four-year, whatever the case may be. All of a sudden, every student in your community has access to the skills that they need to learn and the pathways that are available for them to get that job. Nothing's more inclusive than that.
Mm, definitely. So, you know, what impact are you guys seeing in the schools and the communities where the teachers work?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think one of the big discrepancies in the state of North Carolina is the representation of educators versus the representation of students. And it's as much as 30% difference. You know, you might have roughly a 50-50 student population of students of color and white students, but you only have maybe like at best in, you know, an 80-20 split in most of the state of North Carolina with white educators versus educators of color. And in many cases, especially in our rural communities, that difference could be as well over 30% difference between students and teachers. So because we have been so intentional about being as representative as the state of North Carolina is with our fellowships every year, what we're starting to see is that, you know, these communities now have educators that the students can see themselves in, right? They see these educators being lifted through our program, which I'm, you know, in my very biased opinion, is the most impactful and significant experience that an educator can have in the state of North Carolina. It's a prestigious award that really gives you this leadership perspective, this statewide perspective. These students are seeing these educators that look like them and, you know, are from their community, getting these opportunities to shine, to be leaders, and to showcase themselves as education professionals. And that's the conversation that we're really seeing that we are affecting, that we're starting to change. These are education professionals, and they provide skills that are necessary. These aren't people that settled for this profession. These are people that are deeply passionate and bring product and project management and team building skills that a lot of industries could use.
Definitely. Elaine, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I think thinking about the schools and how the schools are impacted by that, one of the things that we hear most often from fellows in terms of how did it change the way you teach is that they will, after that industry experience, they'll say, I restructured the way I organized my classroom. They are always, always impressed by the teams that are they're seeing in these businesses that they go into. The way that problem solving happens, the way that collaboration happens. And that's maybe very different than the way your class was structured, as you say, when the 80s and the 90s when you were in school. So rather than working isolated and independently, they're really working on restructuring their classroom to work more in teams, to collaborate more, to do the problem solving, the critical thinking. And this the project-based learning that Mark is talking about, that's required. I mean, that's how you work in a team. You work in a team to work through that project and to develop the outcome for it. So I think that's a huge impact.
Definitely. So the people on the call today and also the people who listen to the podcast later, these are industry folks. Can you expand a bit more on your relationships with industry partners, what they look like, how they work? Mark, do you mind taking this one?
Yeah, I can start. Absolutely. And, the first and most important thing is when we come into a community in the state of North Carolina, we look for people that are already connected with the schools or trying to get connected with the schools, people that are really working to build those relationships. We obviously want everybody to be connected to the schools, but not everybody has the capacity or sometimes the interest to do so. And so we really want this to be the most impactful experience for all involved, especially our industry partners. And one of the coolest things about how we've evolved over the years is when we first started, it was very traditionally, this incredible educator immerses for 3 weeks with an industry partner, and the industry partner gives them all of these different ideas and pathways and workforce skills and resources, and they take that back and they write curriculum for their classroom. But what's really interesting is that we've evolved over the years to actually provide more community, district, and even resources back to the industry partners. So for example, we've had professional development that's been created that teach people about financial literacy because of our partnerships in that space. We've had event days with, ag days where the students are running kiosks with live animals and they're really seeing all of these different components of ag represented. But what's been really fascinating for me in our program is to see education professionals placed in a situation with an industry partner where they're not only treated as the education professional that they are, as all of our partners do such an amazing job doing, but they're placed in a situation where they are expected to showcase those skills. So for example, we had a special education teacher work with Cornerstone Building Brands on writing a 50-page document on how to hire and maintain special needs employees. And she traveled to different locations, Cornerstone locations in the southeastern area, and talked to all of these different people, throughout, and then wrote this document that can really assist them with that process and the way of approaching, that sustainable hiring process with this particular, group. And you can imagine that also is something that she's taking back to her class, and her kids are benefiting from that as well because she's learned so much about the industry and really did a deep dive. We've had fellows that worked with creating an employee engagement website, how to better engage employees and provide professional development to your employees, because that's something that we obviously deal with a lot. We've also had fellows that have worked with them on how to better reach underrepresented communities, because nobody knows those communities better than the school system. We talked about, the industries in every county. Well, pretty much every county in the state of North Carolina, the largest employer is the school system.
Yeah.
And so who knows the community better than those educators? And how do you figure out how to better reach all of these kids and these families, than through the educator's lens? So our industry partners, we come in, we ask them about how, what level of commitment they want to have and what are their needs. And we try and create, as the education sort of bridge, our program is, we try and create an experience that benefits both all sides by saying, well, this is what the industry partner makes and this is how they do it. And this is what education needs. What's the path? What's the connection? And so we help bridge these communication gaps.
Yeah. I would just like to jump in if I could and add too that, many of those mentors, the businesses that we're partnering with in that way are also funding partners because this program is not, state supported. We receive about 10% of our funding from the state of North Carolina through the university. We receive another 20% from the Kenan Institute, but 70% of our operating budget is raised on an annual basis, and it comes from these partners that we work with. So they're partners in many ways. Sometimes they're funding partners and choose for whatever reason to not have an internship in their company. An example of that would be Meta or Facebook in Western North Carolina. And they have become a tremendous partner there and funding fellowships for teachers to go into other companies because their site there in North Carolina, there's a data storage site that has high security and can't really have those internships, but are really great partners in funding those experiences for teachers and other businesses in their community.
That's excellent. So, Mark, you already touched on this in your last response, but can you expand a bit more on how companies in North Carolina, how you're working with them to advance their DE&I efforts? I love that cornerstone example.
Absolutely. A lot of companies have incubators that they have, like, you know, they're working on throughout the state in different communities. They have different programs. So it's not just, you know, there's foundations in a lot of these companies that we work with. And so they often have volunteer support and nonprofits that they support and different initiatives that they're very passionate about. And so we are an incredibly collaborative and flexible program. We can, you know, we've been around for 22 years now. And so we can be a hub to help promote other education and other nonprofits and other, you know, volunteer organizations across the state. So what we can do, one of the ways that we can work with companies to help push out these DEI efforts is to work with these incubators in these rural communities, to work with these volunteer organizations, these various nonprofits like food banks and all of these other initiatives that exist in the state. That is another bridge that we can build between the schools and these educators and that particular interests of those industries. So it's not only what the industry makes, like the product, but it's also what their values, their ethics are. What are the things that they really try and promote? So we work with industry partners to create incredibly unique fellowships where we customize the professional development around that need. So, for example, Northeastern North Carolina has very few traditional, what you might consider a traditional computer science industry like Red Hat, SAS, IBM, you know, a lot of those are in the Triangle area, but you know, you may not have them in some of those Northeastern areas. And so you don't have a lot of curriculum or opportunities for students to take computer science courses and see how they could become, you know, successful in that field. So what we can do is we can bring our partners that are in the Triangle area, the computer science traditional partners, and we can make a week of customized professional development for these educators in the Northeastern area where they're seeing the traditional CS and they're learning about computational thinking and, you know, which is in every industry, right? Pretty much every job has computational thinking built in to what they do. And so we're showing them, here's the traditional for 1 week. And then the last 2 weeks, we're going to send you to a local partner and you're going to look for those CS and computational thinking connections with that local partner and the many ways that they incorporate computer science and computational thinking. And then you're going to bring that back to your kids. And then we're going to use that team as an advisory team to say, here's how we as these districts in the Northeastern area can actually create curriculum and programming that can build students' skills so that we can actually help them to compete in this area. You know, we are very flexible, customizable, and I think all of that paired with the industry's passions and values and all of that allows us to be really focused on DEI.
Awesome. Thanks. So how do you think programs like this one can move the needle on DE&I in North Carolina and beyond? Am I right in thinking there are no other programs like this in the whole country?
Not exactly. Elaine, I know I want you to finish on this one because I think you have something great. I just wanted to mention really quickly, we want to be a model for organizations across the state to promote DEI. We want to be a model that is as accessible and as inclusive as any education organization that exists. That is our goal. We are a resource on the color of education map and on the that we've, you know, worked with the Drive Set. We worked with a lot of different organizations to make sure that that is the case. So first things first, every teacher deserves to be a Keenan Fellow. Every educator needs the experience that we can provide. And Elaine, I'm going to let you wrap up with that.
No, I don't know that I can add anything to Mark, but no, I think you said that really well.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll open the floor to questions in a minute, but while everyone kind of mulls those over, I've got one last question, and this one's for you, Elaine. So what's next for the Keenan Fellows? Where are you guys looking to go?
Well, I'm glad that you asked that. We've actually been working on that plan for a couple of years now. So we have over 500 alumni in 67 counties in North Carolina. And as Mark said, they're incredible leaders. They really do. We sort of help them to launch them. And so we've asked ourselves, you know, how do we leverage the capacity that we built through that network of teacher leaders to really scale our own mission? So we've developed a new program. It's called STEMwork. And we just finished piloting it. It'll be first full launch in the 22-23 school year. But what we've done is to develop a blended learning program takes one Keenan Fellow who's been trained as a facilitator for STEMwork. They work with a team of 5 to 7 other teachers in their school or in their school district. They have opportunities where they take them into businesses in their local communities. They're not immersive visits like the 3-week program, but they go in for a half day or a day learning about various businesses in their community. They have 8 online modules that really walk them through the development of a project-based learning unit. The fellow that we have in there as their coach is really their guide on the side. They've done this themselves. They help them to work through that. And then at the end of that school, or by the end of that school year, they are also implementing projects that have created based on the relationships they've had with industries and businesses in their own community, and doing that it's not a large cohort like we normally have 25 to 30 fellows in our cohorts. It's a small local group, but they're learning together and they have a local coach that helps them through it. So that was something that we learned, that, you know, there are a lot of online kinds of programs to do project-based learning, but where they break down is if you don't have the support of other people doing it and someone else who's kind of a little bit more advanced than you. So that's kind of our next step. We now we have 20 teams lined up for this next year. So that will be over 100 teachers that we'll be taking through in the STEMwork program. So that's our next big step.
Wow, that's a lot. Right. So does anyone have any questions that they want to ask of our team here? All right. Well, I'll make sure that everyone gets your contact information so they can reach out to you guys if they have any questions or want to get more involved. You know, we'll hopefully have some folks from North Carolina who are able to listen in and maybe some others who are looking to expand in their states as well.
Yeah, we are considering, you know, we have virtual options for fellowships as well. We learned a lot through the pandemic, I think, as we all have. how to make that a little bit more effective. And so we are happy to work with anybody that wants to engage with some incredible educators and learn more from their, you know, perspective.
Absolutely. We'd be happy to reach out to other states. What you asked earlier is if there's another program like this, and not really to our knowledge, there are different kinds of fellowship programs, but none in particular that have the components of leadership and those immersive experiences with local businesses.
Hmm. Excellent. All right. So we'll make sure everyone's able to get in touch with you. And thank you so much. I hope everyone else is able to join us for our next thought leader interview. That's going to be May 12th, and that's with Corinne Post of Villanova University. But until then, have a great week. And thank you so much again for joining us, Elaine and Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.